HIV Hour is the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news and views on living positively with the virus.
You're listening to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM in the Brighton area and radioreverb.com online. Welcome to the UK's only radio show about HIV and living a healthy life. It's the HIV Hour. On today's show, we feature a rundown of the latest news and talking points about living with HIV from the Brighton area and the world at large, and information on Brighton's HIV organisations and some other events. Do contact us on the HIVHour@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter on HIV_hour. If you miss the show on a Thursday at 7pm, then you can listen again on Monday at 4pm and Tuesday at noon. Or indeed catch up with an older show by going to the Listen Again page on RadioReverb.com.
This is HIVR. We've got Josh in the studio and we've got the lovely Tony and my good self. Tony, how are you this week?
I'm really well, thanks, Sue. Yeah, apart from the weather. Weather's turned
a bit autumn-ish, isn't it?
Mm. Oh, it's horrible, isn't it? Yeah,
no. Where's the sun gone?
I don't know. There was me wanting to go for a bit of gelato this afternoon, and it's absolutely heated down.
It doesn't seem right eating a beautiful ice cream when it's miserable and raining, does it?
No, but it's still ice cream, isn't it?
It is, yeah, of course.
You've got to eat it.
You been up to anything exciting the last week, Tony?
Well, it was my birthday last Sunday.
Oh, right, lovely.
I hatched 47 years ago, so
really old.
And I did a cheeky little interview with Ouch, which is a disability podcast for the BBC this morning.
Right.
About people in social housing that isn't kind of specifically for them, or, you know, it's, what am I trying to say? It's the wrong property set, because I'm on the 8th floor, so, and I use a wheelchair. My lifts go regularly. So, so that was really good. Yeah. So what about you? What have you got?
Yeah, well, I've been busy with, obviously, I'm back off a furlough. I think I mentioned that last time we spoke. So it's busy with my new project, because obviously all my talks now are via Zoom. It's the new, I know we keep saying it, the new norm, and it really is literally the new norm. So that means retraining all my fabulous volunteers to tell their story via Zoom. And you may think, oh yeah, that's easy, but you know, I mean, you've got the etiquette of Zoom, and you know, sometimes I don't know about you, Tony, I spend sometimes about half an hour getting my camera right, getting the light right, getting my chair right. So, and it's retraining the speakers on etiquette and talking through a camera, which is all very new for some people. So,
and I suppose it's because I've been to one of the Positive Voice talks, and it's all about how the speaker connects with the kids and the classroom as a whole, really. And it was, that's going to be a real challenge, but I'm sure it's one.
Yeah, no, it's going, you know, all the speakers are up for it. So, yeah, so I've been quite busy. But we've got another great show this week. We've got, apart from some great stories, we've got Stuart. He done an interview with Craig. He's from G Scene, and he's a fundraiser. And he done a fabulous interview with him some weeks ago. We played half the last time, and we're playing part two this week. So that's really exciting. And I've got a really interesting story for you, Tony. I hope you're not going to blush.
Okay.
It's to do, because we're talking about vaginas. Well, not necessarily vaginas. We're talking about a new vaginal ring to reduce the risk of HIV infection in Africa. So basically, that acts like it's the PrEP drug. So it's like a little sort of rubber ring. And it's obviously got that antiviral medication on it, very similar to PrEP we've just been talking about. It's inserted up into the vagina, and so, and that lasts for about 28 days. Now, the name of it, and excuse me if I get this name wrong, it's Dapivirine, D-A-P-I-V-I-R-I-N-E. So that's the name of the drug. So that is the vaginal ring. Now, let's just look at some of the stats in Africa.
Okay.
In 2018, Tony, 20.6 million people were infected with HIV in Africa. Over
new
20 million.
Or...
Right, okay.
Total infection. Is that total infections, Sue, or is that new infections?
I'm just going to... There was 800,000... Wow. New infections from 2018. Okay. Wow. Now then, in Africa, 12 million people are living with HIV or women. Oh, right? God. Now, get a load of this. 7.16 million people living with HIV are men. So, in other words, in Africa... Tony, women outweigh men living with HIV.
This is going to be, this is not only going to be a lifesaver, but it's going to be a life extender.
So. Well, you know, African women, you know, things are getting better, things are getting across the world, but a lot of African women in these parts of the world, they live differently. They, you know, it's very cultural. You know, they don't question their men. And I know this by speaking to a lot of African ladies that, you know, I've got a very good friend that used to live in Zambia and Zimbabwe. So, you know, she really sort of fills me in what's going on over there and what she experienced. Do you know what I mean, Tony? So that means that that's hopefully going to empower that woman to take, because, and I can understand why. There's so much more HIV within women because they're passing it on to their children. And we look at this other statistic, which is quite astonishing. 1.6 million of people living with HIV are young women aged between 15 and 24 years. Now, apparently that accounts for 26% new diagnosis. So it's the younger women. So this is hopefully going to be a lifeline, if nothing else. So it's going to empower them. And I think it's going to be made fit. It's not going to cost a lot of money. So it's not like they're taking a tablet and they're, you know, the husbands or partners are seeing them take those tablets. They can insert that ring, Tony, that can last for 28 days, you know, and then it's going to safeguard them and it's going to safeguard them and also their children.
Yeah, no, totally. Right. So I'm just thinking of I don't really know the mechanics of a lady's.
Come on then.
Mm-hmm. But so if they put the ring in, are the husband's going to be able to feel that, or is it just something that just, do you know what I mean? I don't know.
Okay.
Really.
I doubt it very much because that'll go right up into the top of the vagina.
Oh, so right. Oh, right. Up into cervix.
It'll go right up there. So, it's like, you know, I suppose when you put a tampon up, you know, you put it up as far as, you know, we're being quite explicit here. And it's good to get those answers from the questions. You know, a tampon, you put a tampon, insert a tampon where you don't, if you feel a tampon, it's not inserted right. So it's the same thing, very similar thing to, I suppose, the femidom. Well, I've never used one myself, but I'm assuming that's inserted, isn't it? But that's slightly different. So it would be inserted where it sort of just comes the top of the cervix.
Also, is it the those Diva Cup things? I saw them on YouTube, not that I looked at them, but they are sort of like a cup thing for like when ladies are on the menstrual cycle.
Yeah.
Instead of using tampons or pads or whatever, they put this thing in, but that goes right up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's right. So it goes, you know, it inserts right up. Yeah. So it's all good stuff, isn't it? I mean, we have to stop the transmission. So, hey ho, you know, so that's going to be, like I said, it's going to be hopefully a lifesaver.
Yeah. No, is that drug going to be used in Europe or is it just for Africa? Is it going to be?
It's launching in Africa, and obviously, because that's where some of the highest percentage people being diagnosed, women in fact, you know, so that, and I think it's going to be sort of, you know, and it's going to be quite cost effective as well. So, you know, and one of these things in some of the African countries, it's cost and healthcare and all of that, which is, but look forward to having, perhaps we can have an update and just see if some of that, in perhaps a year's time, if some of those statistics in women and transmissions to children have actually dropped. So
yeah, that'd be great to see. Also, like you said, when people take meds, it depends if they've eaten something or they, you know, might not feel that great, the drug might not be absorbed, whereas if it's like in, and like an implant, you know, for the female contraceptive, it's in there, isn't it, so that the hormone or whatever, right, or the drug is being released 24/7.
So it's like a slow release, and that, I think the vaginal acts very similar, like a slow release, you know, throughout the 28 days. So interesting. Radio Reverb. Welcome back. If you just tuned in, this is the HIV Hour on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM in the Brighton area and .com online. You've got another interesting story for us, Tony, haven't you?
I've got a cheeky little one. Okay, due to the corona, the COVID-19, I've just looked at the UniAIDS, and it says countries are urged to act over potential HIV drug shortages, that's the ARVs we take, within the next 2 months. So it says stocks of medication for HIV patients could run out in the next 2 months because of higher costs linked to the lockdowns, COVID-19, border closures, and that's UniAIDS said that on Monday the 20th of July. So it's quite serious. I mean, it said in call to countries and manufacturers to take preemptive action now, the agency has said both production of generic antiretroviral drugs and their distribution are threatened. I suppose that's because, like, airlines, like, let's say, borders are closed down, aren't they?
Yes, of course. Are they specifically saying any particular countries could be affected?
They're saying sub-Saharan. So here it said up to UniAIDS also cited forecasting models that indicated that 6 month disruption of antiretroviral therapy in sub-Saharan Africa alone could lead to 500,000 additional AIDS related deaths. Now that's horrific. That's just in sub-Saharan, so you know.
Do you remember, I think there was we'd just gone into lockdown and people were panic buying. Do you remember? It seems like a long time ago now, but it was only months ago. And I think a lot of, and quite rightly so, a lot of positive people got very anxious about, are we going to run out of our meds? And I did get scared for a little bit. I mean, how did you feel? Because there was a lot of stuff going on in the media. Oh, we're going to run out of the meds. Oh, but what are we going to do?
I think because I get a year at a time. So I'm sort of, I've still got about 6 weeks to go. So felt kind of settled, but I, you know, you still got that thing in the back of your mind. Well, what if when I go and collect my another year's worth, you know, even though I take the generic stuff, they move me on to that. But, you know, it still does worry you, you know. Okay, yeah. It's happening in sub-Saharan, but it says here that the increased manufacturing and transport costs needs to find new sources of key pharmaceutical ingredients, the currency fluctuations caused by the economic shock of COVID-19. So the medicines in India alone have gone up from between $100 US to $225 US.
Wow.
Oh no, sorry, $100 million US to $225 million US a year. More expensive than it was before. So you're thinking, I think I worry about places like Africa, Thailand, the Far East, countries that aren't as, I mean, you know, Thailand is developed, but, you know, their infrastructure, especially like we were talking about Africa with the rings for the ladies.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm shocked that a continent could run out of meds within 2 months. Yeah. It shocks me. What about you? Tell me your thoughts.
No, it is scary. It is. I felt very scared. A little, you know. I go for mine every 6 months, and I had quite a big bit of a, not necessarily a stockpile, but I had quite a lot, and I managed to get my new prescription a couple of months ago for another like 6 or whatever 7 months it is. But you know, if we haven't. The situation in other countries isn't like ours, and in some countries, like the States, you got to pay for them.
Yeah. Do they pay?
Have I got that right? Have I got that right or wrong, Tony?
Let me just check. Because I thought sexual health was it what? Because I watched that Pose on Netflix. Is it?
Oh, I loved that. Yes, I watched that. I'm not sure whether it could have. I know in some parts of the world, isn't it?
Okay. The average cost of retroviral therapy in America costs $9,360 per year.
Right. Because it's like all private healthcare and all of that stuff, isn't it? But I mean, if you're sort of unable to, you know.
It says antiretroviral therapy was most expensive for those with higher CD4 counts. So the more CD4 counts you've got, the more, you know, T cells and stuff, the more expensive it is. But I would have thought that'd be the higher your T cell, the lower the price. Anyway.
Well, I don't know. But what I'm trying to say, we're quite fortunate in the respect that we don't have to pay for our medication. Yeah. And we have been urged and promised that we're not going to run out, but you know, you've got more, perhaps more vulnerable people than ourselves that are thinking, you know. So I just hope, you know, if anyone's listening, and if you're perhaps you're running out of your meds, and you just contact your consultant. You know, we have been told by greater forces that you know it's going to be okay. But if you're worried, please make a phone call and get reassured and speak to someone. Would you say, Tony?
Yeah, definitely. Or even if you've got contact with someone at the Beacon or even us at the Worthing Hub over on the Worthing side, just give us a ring and we can always put a call into the community nurse team, see what's going on.
97.2 FM. Radio Reverb. And we've got Stuart next with part two of his interview with Craig, who completed a 2020 challenge run for Terence Higgins Trust. So let's have a listen.
Came to undertake such a massive challenge, and not just physically, but mentally. How did you cope?
You mean with the running challenge?
Yeah.
So I ran for... I guess there's lots of things that are connected here. I was not very open at all about being HIV positive for many, many years. So I didn't... Apart from my partner, who then became my husband, who was with me on the day that I found out that I was HIV positive. So, of course, I told him. But we didn't really tell anybody else. And I don't regret that decision, but I think I would make a different decision now.
Really? Yeah.
It was very much, I don't want anybody to know.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it?
Yeah.
Back then, it's like that. It was like that. And the mixed reactions you get from people when you do tell them.
Sure.
Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's horrific.
And I think it's the fear of those horrific reactions. So therefore, I didn't want anybody to know. So I didn't tell people for years and years and years.
Wow.
So it's kind of coming out.
Again.
As an HIV positive person, has been a slow process for me. But one thing that I did, which is part of that process, I think, was I ran the Brighton Half Marathon for Terence Higgins Trust 3 years ago, February 2017. And I was amazed at how generous people were in terms of raising, in terms of sponsoring me.
Yeah, okay.
So that's always been in the back of my mind, I think, that I did that and I enjoyed it and it was a successful experience. And now once you're on the kind of Terence Higgins Trust, and I imagine this is the same with all charities, once you're on their mailing list, you kind of get bombarded with emails and why don't you do this and why don't you do that? And I've never really been inspired by anything that's been suggested. But there was a whole kind of perfect storm of things happening this year. We just entered lockdown.
Yeah.
I found that. And I mean, we're kind of out of it a bit now, but I still feel a little bit odd about it.
You feel nervous about it?
I understand why, and I think it's absolutely right and proper, but I just feel like my liberty's been taken away.
Yeah.
And I hadn't really thought about until lockdown happened how much I was relying on all of the things you get to do every single day without thinking about them,
yeah,
kind of keep you up. And so whether that's getting the train to London, whether that's meeting a friend after work, whether that's going to somebody's house for dinner, whether it's just going to the gym, whatever it is, all of these things that you do,
yeah,
on March the 21st, they all stopped.
Yeah.
And immediately, you kind of, if that's your kind of buoyancy aid, you just start to sink.
You do, yeah, yeah.
And I felt after about 2 weeks, it's a novelty.
Yes, yeah.
But then
four
after,
months.
Yeah, yeah, after that, you know, it started to really wear on me.
Yeah.
I found myself having lots of, I assume now, are panic attacks.
Oh, right.
Certainly,
okay.
Anxiety attacks, not sleeping, waking up at 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning every day, and they're not being able to sleep.
Yeah.
So
that's
my,
a horrible thing, isn't it?
Yeah. So your waking day is from 2 a.m. until 10 p.m. every day of the week. So then exhaustion sets in.
Yeah.
I was lucky
because
I was working,
yeah,
but I was working at home.
Okay.
So you're never leaving the house. I found that really difficult. I knew a couple of other people as well who were struggling. I had a friend in London who is also HIV positive, who was really struggling, mental health wise as well.
Okay.
In the lockdown.
Yeah.
And also he was furloughed, so he was getting up every morning. He had nothing to do.
Right. Okay.
So there was lots of things going on in my head when this email dropped in from THT and said, "Oh, we're doing this thing called the 2020 challenge."
Okay.
It was a 20-day, so from start to finish, you had to do whatever you're going to do, you have to do it in 20 days.
Okay.
And they were suggesting things like, why don't you do 100 sit-ups a day or 100 press-ups a day, and
right,
you film yourself and put it on YouTube. And I didn't, any of the suggestions I didn't like, but I really missed going to London because I worked in London.
Mm.
Missed going to London every day, missed seeing my friends in London, missed seeing my colleagues in London. So I just thought, why don't I run to London, not literally to London, but I looked up how many miles is it to London.
Yeah.
And the first kind of station that I went with was London Bridge Station, because when I moved to London 30 years ago, that was kind of my gateway station. You hit the train to London Bridge Station, then get off and walk everywhere.
Yeah.
So London Bridge has always got this kind of, it's kind of like a big marker on the map.
Yeah,
for me.
Yeah.
So I went to London Bridge, and I guess the funny story is, when I put what's the distance from my house to London Bridge in Google Maps, I didn't tell Google Maps that I was going on foot. So the mileage it gave me was in the car and all the way around the M25 and in through Dartford.
Oh, my God.
So actually, if I'd done it properly, it's only 51 miles to London Bridge.
Yep, yeah.
Not 72.2 times 2, which is 144.4. But
right,
I went with the original 144.4 miles anyway.
Wow.
I thought that felt like more of a challenge. So yeah, so I ran kind of 10 miles a day every day for 3 days, then I had a day off, then did a couple more days, then had a day off, then 3 more days. I did go to London twice. I went to London for work. So while I was in London, I did some of the running.
Oh, did you?
Around London.
Oh, right.
And then I finished a couple of weeks ago.
Only that recent?
No, yeah.
Wow,
yeah,
that
yeah
is amazing. How much money did you raise?
£3,100.
God almighty. That
so it's not quite Captain Tom money.
No.
But I'm very happy about it. I'm really happy. And really pleased. People's generosity.
Yeah.
You know, and also you get a friend of mine, she just said if you, she sponsored me £50, and
yeah,
she said if you run one of your runs in a pair of fishnets,
yeah, I was going to ask
you about
sponsor that.
You,
yeah, yeah,
I'll double my money.
Wow!
So I found little things like that.
You can't not say no.
Well, no, of course
you?
Not. Yeah.
Yeah.
So actually, I did the finishing run in the fishnets, and she was there at the finishing line to take a photograph.
That's quite liberating as well.
Yeah,
I should imagine.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
a bit of a queer performance
yeah,
art.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic. Oh, brilliant. Okay, so. Can you tell us about how you went about planning it and what support you received from your friends and family?
Lots of support from my partner, lots of support from my friends as
great
well. I did a little update every day. So whenever I did a run, I did a social media update. And I would try to tell a little story,
yeah,
to try and inspire people to kind of connect
okay
with the story, so
oh,
that they would then sponsor me some money. And actually, although the kind of sponsorship kind of takes off in a big way at the beginning,
yeah,
and then it sort of dies off. But every time I posted something online, so a picture of me on the run or a picture of something I saw on the run with a little story, a little bit more money would kind of dribble in.
Excellent.
There
wow
was one day, for example, I ran out to right up to Shoreham. And it was a bit of a miserable day in particular. And a friend of mine died in December. And this friend of mine, he always used to call me Doris.
Right.
And as I was running on this particular day, I saw a beach hut, and the beach hut was called Doris.
Okay.
So I felt like he was running with me on that, on that particular day.
That is amazing.
But actually, if you then post that story on social media with a photograph of the beach hut, and people seem to really like that kind of a story.
Yeah, definitely.
And then sponsorship money starts to come
interesting.
In. Yeah, and I think it's probably not enough just to say I'm doing this wrong.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Here it is, and then you do it, and then you say to everybody, right, I've done it now. Whereas actually, you kind of need to keep saying to people, this is what's going on, this is why I'm doing it.
Yeah.
There was another day I ran this sort of the Kemp Town end of Brighton towards the marina, and it was a particularly beautiful morning because I used to run really early in the morning.
So okay.
leave the house at 4:30.
Yeah, I did notice that when I was doing my research.
Yeah. And then back, then I'd be home by about 6:30.
That is so disciplined.
Yeah, well, I wasn't sleeping, was I? So
it was kind of true.
It was all I could do not to go running at 3:00. God. But I thought, no, that's, you know, it's dark and dangerous. Yep. Don't go out until 4:30. But there was right down near the pier, there's a ship container on the beach, which is painted yellow, and it's got the word lifeguard on the sign. And I thought it was really, this idea of a lifeguard, I think, is really interesting.
Yeah.
Because during lockdown, all the lifeguards were not working.
That's
true. If anybody went to the beach and went swimming in the sea, you're kind of swimming without a lifeguard.
Oh, yeah.
This shipping container was all locked up and sealed.
Right.
I'm thinking of all the things that you need to save somebody, all locked in this container, and we can't get at it. So I just like this idea of, you know, a time like this, and I certainly feel that to a certain extent with my HIV. I've had a lot of support, of course, but there comes a point when you've kind of got to be your own lifeguard. You know, you can have a consultation with the doctor, you can have support from the health worker, you can be treated really kindly by all the people in there,
but
then when you go home, you've also got to make sure you take your drugs when you're supposed to take them.
Yeah.
You look after yourself.
You've
got to be your own lifeguard.
You have, definitely. And sort of put yourself in a driving seat kind of thing.
Yeah, you have.
Sort of like steer your own course a little bit, with the help and support.
Yeah.
Doing that during the lockdown was a challenge for you.
It sort of helps, though, you know, because what it made me get out of the house, because we were allowed to leave the house once a day for exercise.
I know.
I just did it for 2 hours. but also, I felt like when I had to then come back, because I was working from home, so I had to be online, ready to be in some sort of meeting at Harper State.
Wow.
I still had a couple of hours to get some breakfast, sit down, have a cup of tea, have a shower. Yeah. And then I felt when I started work, I've done something today already.
Oh my God.
And then I don't just feel hemmed in and locked in.
A good way of dealing with it all as well. Yeah. You know, at the same time, getting rid of that energy and stuff is going to free up make your mental health a little bit more better, isn't it? Okay. And what sort of training did you go through to before you started this sort of mind-blowing adventure?
Well, I've been running for 24 years. The first time I ever ran anything really long was the Brighton Half Marathon. So I would be running this sort of 3-4 miles a go for years, like once a day, 5 days a week.
Yeah.
Then my running kind of dropped off because my job changed. So I decided to, when I was in London, I decided to make running part of my commute. So I would get off the train at Victoria.
Okay.
And then run to Paddington where I was working.
My God, that's quite a journey, isn't
it? Yeah, about two and a half miles.
It seems longer, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because London's quite a big place.
Yeah, that's true. But it was nice. It's right across Hyde Park. And then in the evening, I'd run the 2.5 miles back.
Mind you, I say that because... if I was trying to run 2.5 miles, I think I'd die.
It's the couch to 5K thing, isn't it? As well, you should try it. It's good. It's a good program.
Oh, that's brilliant.
So I've been running, was running that for years, and then I followed kind of like an official, I think it was I just found it online. I think it was a Bupa training plan for the half marathon. I just followed it to the letter.
Wow.
And that worked really well for me.
God, what an inspiration.
Because I'd done that already.
Yeah.
When I decided to do this, I thought, okay, this is what I'll do. Although I've got to say, the difficulty of this did take me by surprise.
Did it?
I think my brain is 26.
Yep.
And my body is definitely,
I have that problem,
you know,
a little
over
bit.
Over the age
of
48.
Oh, you look really well.
Thanks.
Say.
Thanks. But things kick in, you know, like, so halfway, you know, 10 days in, something starts going on with your right hip, and then something starts going on simultaneously with your left knee.
Yeah.
So then you have to take a day off, and then you start to get this kind of panicked. Am I not going to be able to do it? Am I not going to be able to finish it?
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
no, during lockdown, there's no physios. There's no sports massage. Yeah. So I can't call somebody up and say, really need a deep tissue sports massage, which when I was preparing for the half marathon, I could. If my calf muscles are getting tight.
You could have somebody to do a sports massage, for example. Yeah.
But during lockdown, I just have to kind of sort it out.
It's a bit similar to, like, you know, when you're a regular gym user and you miss a day and you start to feel a bit sort of grubby and a bit depressed and stuff. Is it similar?
Yeah, it is actually. You can, I had a running injury a few years ago, for about 4 or 5 years ago now. So I've done all this running since the injury. So that's fine. But that injury was not insignificant. And I had to stop running for 6 months.
Okay.
And I found that really impacted how I felt.
Oh, my God, yeah.
And because I was commuting and running as part of my commute, and I suddenly couldn't do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I was aware of using running to, like, deal with a lot of things.
That's really interesting.
If you had a tough day.
Yeah.
You know, but I would leave, I'd get changed into my running kit, and I would run from work to Victoria. So by the time I got on the train at Victoria, all the stresses of the day, I'd kind of run them off.
Yeah.
So then by the time I got home,
it's
all good and fine and no problem.
That's really good. You seem to have, like, quite a few ways of coping with stress. Like, I mean, I've always found writing got me through a lot of dark times and stuff.
So if you can do that. That helps as well, yeah.
And running, my God.
I had a few years ago, I had a counsellor. I have a therapist now, don't you know? I had a counsellor many years ago who was talking, and I was having a particularly difficult time. I'd just been diagnosed with HIV. I was coming out of the hedonistic period. Yeah. And actually, she said to me, she was talking about my exercise. I said, oh, I'm going to the gym. She said to me, take the exercise outside.
Oh.
Because she said that there's something about the space above your head and the air and the natural bright light that really works. And that really worked for me. Another reason to run so early in the morning was, in the middle of summer, it's light, you know, it's light.
Yeah, it's half past, it does get so light early, doesn't it?
So running all the way along the seafront down to the marina and stuff at that time of day, the sun's coming up, and it's great. And actually all of that really, really, really helps.
My God, that is such a good thing to remember, isn't it? And do you have any future plans or any more challenges up your sleeve?
Do you know what? You're not the first person to ask me that. I'm like, give me a break.
Just
might take a little bit of time. Terence Higgins Trust have asked me to be a fundraising ambassador.
Really?
Which I've initially said to them, okay, it's a no at the moment, but it's not a no never.
Yeah.
It's just a not at the moment. Yeah. I've just got a lot going on that I need to kind of sort out and with work and various personal challenges. So I just need to sort that out and then maybe later. So I think in the future, I enjoy it. I enjoy the support that you get. And I would encourage other people to do it. Whatever your charity is, what was interesting and a little bit disheartening. I did an interview right at the beginning of the challenge with the Argos newspaper.
Yeah.
And the it's a very newspaper thing to do, and it's fine. I'm not upset with the newspaper. they made my HIV status the headline of the article.
Oh God.
Which, to me, it's kind of like, well, it's not really about that. I mean, that is part of the story, but that's not the thing.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And of course, what happens, I mean, any advice I would give to anybody is if there's a newspaper article that you feature in and you look at it online, don't read the comments.
Because
people are just horrific.
Can't they? Yeah.
And not everybody's nasty.
So did you get some?
Yeah, of course. And actually, do you know what?
That's a shame.
In a way, it's not okay, but also I live in a post-Twitter world, post-Facebook world. I get it. People just very easily go on a social media app or on a website.
I just feel like they can let rip.
Yeah, and it's nonsense.
It is terrible, isn't it?
I guess what was equally as disappointing was people who I think thought they were supporting me by responding to some of these horrible comments would also then start using really offensive language and calling these other people names. That was a little bit disheartening, I found really tricky. I mean, it's interesting you saying to me that I look well, and you know, I think I look really well. but that was in the article. I said something about, you know, I'm fortunate, you know, I'm doing really well. But people just weighed in with, you don't look well, mate. Look at you in that photo. And so it's tough to read things like that. But you also just have to think, it's not, those comments are not real.
No.
They're not really about me.
Yeah.
They're about
sort of damned if you do and you're damned if you don't, aren't you, in a way?
Yeah, you are.
Sort of like, would you give any sort of advice to anybody, any listeners that are sort of listening to this, any advice about doing a challenge themselves if they wanted to sort of like raise money, get involved and get a little bit healthier?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of getting healthy, I'm a big advocate for exercise. If you're going from a standing start, you have to be realistic in terms of what you're going to do.
Yeah.
And doing a little bit every day or deciding to do a little bit of something every other day.
Yeah.
There's a guy I follow. Well, there's two. Let's plug two local. One's gay and one's local. So we'll hit two birds with one stone. So there's a gay online fitness program called Fitter Confident You, I've been part of. There's a Facebook page you can join without having to pay for any programs, and you can just be part of an online fitness community and talk to other people, share stories. And there are people of all shapes and sizes on that program.
Wow.
Some people might be you know, really quite heavy, and their goal is they just want to lose a little bit of weight.
Yeah.
Some people might feel that they want a bit more muscle, and they're starting from a very slim point and they're not happy with that. So actually there's loads of conversations happening on these Facebook pages about, well, how did you do this and how did you do that, and I've had a really bad day today, I don't feel great, and lots of
support. There's a lot of support. It's brilliant.
You can also buy into programs. You can pay for a program. So and there's different programs doing what you want, but actually the guy who runs it, Matt, he's got a whole Instagram thing as well, and he just does these little daily positive mantras about, if you want a day off, have a day off.
Yeah.
If you don't feel like exercising today, don't do it. You
know? Wow.
But he's done for 100 days in a row during lockdown, he's done a free 45-minute workout online every single day. So for anybody, who wants to access it, it's totally free.
Yeah.
Every lunchtime, 12 o'clock. And of course, it's online later, so if you miss the live at 12, you can go and watch it. Go watch it later. So I find engaging with other people in that way really quite helpful.
Yeah.
There's a local guy called Luke Cameron, who he runs an online his own personal training program. Physically face-to-face, but also he does it big online. I follow him on Instagram. I'm not his client, but I find he's really motivating and really inspiring for take responsibility and move a bit every day. And actually he's somebody I watch and follow and listen to what he has to say, and the advice he posts little videos every day, and the advice that he's giving to his clients. And when his clients achieve a little personal win, he posts that online. He's like, I'm so proud of my clients.
Brilliant.
So I find that kind of idea of community.
And
I think joining some sort of fitness community, I think is important. I think just doing it on your own,
it's hard, isn't it? It really needs somebody to motivate them and stuff. Like, it's making that first step as well.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, especially, and it's the same with the challenge. I wanted to do this challenge on my own.
Okay.
But you can do a challenge with other people. I mean, you could run from here to Glasgow if you wanted, but say there's 10 of you and you all do a bit each, and you could do a day each, and then you start again and do a day each again.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask you whether you'd done it on your own and whether you'd had support along the way.
I have had a lot of support. I had one friend who came and joined me for a couple of miles one day. I had the friend who doubled my sponsorship for wearing fishnets. She was there, and some friends were there, and my partner was there on the last day. With like a finishing line for me to a finishing tape for me to run through, and so I've had that kind of support as well. And also people, when they've sponsored me, they've said really nice things, made really positive
statements. Good. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, Craig, that's about it, I guess. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I mean that, to meet you. You're a real inspiration.
Thank you very much.
And I ask people, do they like any music to be played, any songs? I thought of a few, but they're probably a bit cheesy, like Keep On Running.
If you want to play Keep On Running. Who is Keith Pomeroy?
Oh,
who sings Keep On
Something
Running?
Oh, I wrote it down, actually. Some group.
I'll tell you what, from that era, I would play Martha Reeves and the Vandellas' Nowhere to Run To.
I love
that song.
I shall make sure that's
Nowhere
played.
To Run To.
Yeah.
So I did run to London, but I didn't really run to London, so that's kind of like Nowhere to Run
That's
To.
That's quite right, Nowhere to Run To. Right. Craig, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And I'll look out for you.
Thanks.
All right, take care. Bye.
So I want to introduce you to Ruth. She works for the Terence Higgins Trust, and she's going to be talking about a really great new initiative here in the city of Brighton. Hi, Ruth.
Hi, Sue. Hello. So I'm Ruth, and I work at Terence Higgins Trust. My role is Health Promotion Coordinator, and that essentially I do the clinical testing in Ship Street in normal circumstances. So we have a drop-in clinic open to people every day of the week. But obviously that's closed at the moment due to COVID.
Everything seems to have closed, but do tell what's going on now.
Yeah, so because Ship Street is closed, we realise that we're not offering the service that we used to offer. And whilst people can order their own self-HIV tests online and do the tests in their own home, it's just not quite the same as coming into clinic and seeing a health professional, getting some really good advice. So what we've decided to do is set up what we're calling a virtual clinic. And that is a way of sort of simulating the clinic that we have at Ship Street via video call, so a bit like you and I are doing now. It will be an opportunity for people to ask any questions, to have some clear and informed advice. It's quite easy to Google anything nowadays, but it's not easy to get accurate information back. And when you're talking about something as important as your sexual health, it's good to know that you're getting the correct advice around
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely, absolutely. And can I just say, not everyone, Ruth, not everyone, and I know there's so many, which is great, which is a great positive, there's so many different forms of tests and you can send away for the test kit, but not everyone wants to do that, Ruth, do they? The ones in support, perhaps while doing that.
Yeah, and it can be really useful to have support because there's a lot of things around, especially HIV testing in terms of window periods and what actually is a HIV risk. And having someone there that knows their stuff to give you that advice and information and even just to support you in sort of taking blood yourself, because that's probably something that a lot of people haven't done before. And, you know, just having someone there to guide you and support you through that can really help. And make the process a bit easier for people, and the same with any referrals that might be needed as well. You know, we are essentially here for people's sexual health and HIV testing, but we also make referrals to other organisations and services if we pick up that people might need that.
Sure. And
if you're doing a self-test at home by yourself, that's a service you're kind of missing out on.
So how can people get involved with it? And it's fairly a unique new thing that you're doing at the Terence Higgins Trust, isn't it?
Yeah, it's totally new, actually. It's only been running a few weeks. As I said earlier, you can get a self-test from test.tht.org.uk, and that's free at the moment.
Wow.
Anyone living in
Brighton. How much would that normally cost, Ruth?
I think it's £15.
Oh, right. So someone would save a cost of £15, and especially in these circumstances, that might be quite a good thing.
Yeah, definitely. So if you're eligible and you live in Brighton and Hove, you put your postcode in, and the internet will, or the website will make it free for you, and it will be delivered in a discreet packaging straight to your door. So you'd order that test, and then in order to get a virtual clinic appointment, you just need to email virtualclinic@tht.org.uk, and we'll sort it all out for you, and we'll contact you via video call.
Right. Would it be your lovely self or some of your other colleagues?
It would be me and two of my other colleagues, Aisha and Marek.
Oh, yeah. They're all lovely there, aren't they, Ruth?
They are. We're all lovely.
And they'll see a nice smiley face, won't they?
They will, yeah, definitely.
So do you just want to give out them contact details again?
Sure.
That everyone gets to know about this.
So to order your test, it's test.tht.org.uk. And to contact the virtual clinic, it's virtualclinic@tht.org.uk.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. This is really important, and I'm sure a lot of people will take this up, but especially if the test kit, which was £15, is sort of free still at the moment. So Thank you so much for coming on, and well done, and continue the fantastic work and the services that you do in Brighton.
Thank you. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, Ruth. You take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
HIV Hour is the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news and views on living positively with the virus.